Johnson. We're sorry to inform you your request for a second loan has been refused. And the board of directors up in the city has instructed us to take the farm from you. We understand your problems and wish that we could help you. But the falling price of wheat is not our concern. And the cost of operation may well be rising, but the fact is that you lose more than you earn.
People are being victimized all across the country and around the world as the United Nations system is being established, the system of global governance designed to enslave all of mankind. Welcome to the American Exposé radio broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, for August 5th, 2005, as we close out another week. Thanks for being with us as we spend the hour together. I appreciate you folks being with us on a busy Friday, taking time out of your schedule, your pre-weekend schedule. And we have some information about the United Nations, some of the conferences that they have coming up. And we'll share this right out at the outset, because I like to do this because I don't think anybody else does this, some of these things. I mean, obviously, some of them certain people cover and some of them don't, but there's so many of them, I don't see how any one person could cover them all. Apparently World Water Week is coming up August 21st through the 27th, 2005. Water is very important. Food is very important as well, but controlling water is, if you can control water, you control the populations of people. In various countries, you have water supplies that are contaminated, and water supplies are being contaminated here as well. Now, maybe not on the same level, but ladies and gentlemen, I have a water cooler in my kitchen. And we have good water here that we get out of the well, but it has a lot of calcium buildup in it. And I have a softener, but it doesn't filter out the calcium. And so we have this water cooler, and the water tastes very good. The process that the place that we buy the water from, which is called the water store, it's a place locally here. The process that they use for purification is called reverse osmosis, and they say that they can get 99% of the additives out of the water. Any impurities, 99% of it, they say they can get out. And successfully do get out. But I was talking to the woman at the water store the other day as I was getting some, refilling my bottles, and we have these 5 gallon, well, you've seen these, it's the same thing as any water cooler that you've seen in a place of business, and maybe some of you have these at your home as well. But I was in this water store, and I was talking to the woman because I was kind of curious. I wanted to make sure that all of the fluoride and everything that the city puts in it was taken out by the water store, because I don't want to be drinking that stuff. And she said, the woman told me something very interesting. She said, yes, we take out 99%. We're able to successfully get out 99% of everything that the city puts in and all of the impurities that stay in the water. She says, and then what she said after that astounded me. She said it takes 3 gallons of the city's water 3 gallons of the city's water in order to make 1 gallon of our water. In other words, what she's saying, and she spelled it out for me, because I said, what's that? What are you talking about? It takes 3 gallons. She says, there's so much junk that they add to the city water. She says that literally we are filtering out 2 gallons of junk. So the ratio is 3 to 1. She says there's so much junk in the city water, so much garbage that they add to it, that literally we take 3 gallons of their water, and by the time we're done filtering out all of the garbage, we are left with only 1 gallon of water. Pure water. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that astounded me. Because this is the stuff that people are drinking every single day. And so, obviously, we have a population that is toxic. And we're wondering where all these infectious diseases are coming from. We're wondering where cancer comes from. Well, it may very well be that we could look no further than the water supply. Now, this United Nations conference, this is a water issues announcement list that I get this from, and I'm on a number of mailing lists here from the Institute for Sustainable Development. But it says, during World Water Week in Stockholm, on the 21st to the 27th of August 2005, we will informally launch the report, From the Mountain to the Tap, How Land Use and Water Management Can Work for the Rural Poor, which summarizes research commissioned by the Tropical Forestry Research Program of the UK Department for International Development. The potential implications of this results from this four-year multi-country collaboration in Costa Rica, South Africa, Tanzania, Grenada, and India are immense as they contradict current tree planting policies and environmental beliefs. Trees, if planted in water scarce environments, trees may reduce dry season flows and therefore worsen the living conditions of the poor. The research results point to the need for water managers and policymakers to base decisions on tree planting schemes on scientific evidence appropriate for the site. Unless there is urgent action, and see, there you have a crisis, unless there is urgent action, the looming water crisis will aggravate and leave the most vulnerable, the rural and urban poor populations, ever more disadvantaged. To receive additional information on the booklet and the research that contributed to it, contact FRP Senior Administrator, Mrs. you got to be kidding me. Cataline is what it looks like. Mrs. Cataline Rothschild Van Look. Isn't that amazing? Her email address is k.rothschild@nrent.co.uk. Well, so it's pretty obvious that we have the Rothschilds involved in the control of water, the management of water. Whenever you hear the word control, or I'm sorry, whenever you hear the word management, always substitute it for the word control. That's the way it is. More information about the forestry research program is available on the web at www.frp.uk.com. Once again, frp.uk.com. The World Water Week, they say, includes the Stockholm Water Symposium, tropical plenary sessions and panel debates, scientific workshops, independently organized seminars and side events, exhibitions, and festive prize ceremonies. Participants in Stockholm are experts from 100 countries and representing the business, civil society, governmental, intergovernmental, science, and water management sectors. Topics in Stockholm cover a wide range of water and development-related issues. Check www.worldwaterweek.org for more information. Again, that website, if you would like to find out more information about World Water Week, you can go to worldwaterweek.org. And that's what we're about here, ladies and gentlemen, is providing opportunities for you to do your own research. As we move along here, there is another conference coming up, and this one is in December. And this one's called Strengthening Climate Cooperation, Compliance and Coherence, an International Law Symposium. They say the Center for International Sustainable Development Law, in collaboration with the Université de Montréal Faculty of Law and the McGill University Faculty of Law as co-hosts, invites the submission of 250-word abstracts complete with a short biography and contact information from scholars, scientists, and jurists willing to present a paper at the International Symposium called Strengthening Climate Cooperation, Compliance, and Coherence. You see, the orchestration, the manipulation, the pieces of the puzzle are being put into place for control. This symposium is going to be held in Montreal, December 2nd to the 3rd of this year, 2005. The submission deadline for the paper is August 30th, 2005, they say. Now, it says, this International Law Symposium on Sustainable Developments in Law and Policy on Climate Change presents a unique opportunity for scholarly dialogue between lawyers, scientists, and policymakers, for exchange information on the most recent climate law trends and practices, and for participants to build their knowledge and capacity in this important emerging area. The focus of the event is threefold. Cooperation is the first focus. Cooperation, recent developments in law and policy to support joint implementation, and the Clean Development Mechanism, or CDM, and future directions for these mechanisms. Secondly, the focus will be compliance. Oh, we hear a lot about compliance today, don't we, ladies and gentlemen? Recent developments in international law and policy to strengthen compliance with the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change and the Kyoto Protocol through facilitation and enforcement. Bear in mind, the focus more and more, ladies and gentlemen, will be on international law as national sovereignty is done away with. Coherence is the third focus for the symposium. Intersections between global and domestic climate regimes and other international regimes, trade and investment, indigenous peoples, and other human rights, biodiversity, and decertification. The symposium convokes between 80 to 120 leading international legal experts, academics, policymakers, representatives of civil society organizations, and the media, for 2 days of constructive dialogue on recent sustainable developments, quote-unquote, in international and domestic law and policy on climate change. It will be organized in a dynamic format of plenary sessions, legal expert panels, and practical workshops. It will result in several outputs. A series of working papers commissioned for the event will provide materials for a new book on sustainable developments in law and policy on climate change, space to review a new legal capacity building annual, sustainable development law on climate change that is being edited by the CISDL lawyers and law professors from various regions of the world, and a forum to develop new networks and communications, I guess that would be. The right-hand side of this sheet is cut off, by the way, so I'm doing the best I can to decipher what the words are here, so bear with me. Communication of practice in this emerging field, they say. Scholars, jurists, scientists, and others are encouraged to submit abstracts with a biography and contact information attached. So anyway, they discuss in this symposium land use. They say specific topics or for sessions, workshops, and seminar and legal research working papers, they say. Number one, land use. Private property has got to be in the crosshairs. Land use and land use change and forestry in the international climate regime. Number two, green investment schemes, greenwashing or key to compliance. Number three, joint implementation, setting of rules. Number four, integration of international and domestic law. Did you hear that, ladies and gentlemen? I want to repeat that again. These are things that are on the agenda for this conference in December of this year. Okay? Number four was integration of international and domestic law. Number five, linkages between the Kyoto mechanisms in national and regional emission trading schemes. Number six, governing and regulating the Kyoto mechanisms. Number seven, implementing subnational emission trading and other reduction schemes in federal countries. I believe that word is federal. Once again, it's cut off at the right. Number eight, unilateral CDM. Opportunities and recent progress in private sector carbon finances. Additionality, challenges for private sector carbon finance, and it goes on and on. I'm not going to read them all because I don't want to bore you folks. Hopefully I haven't already bored you. But I think it's important to keep track of what's going on here. They say the symposium is being held parallel to the first meeting of the parties of the Kyoto Protocol and the 11th conference of the parties to United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change in Montreal from December 2nd to the 3rd. As such, speakers and participants are welcome to Montreal and kindly requested to ensure that they can cover their own costs of travel and accommodation and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, a couple of conferences / symposiums that you might want to know about and be aware of, as they may or may not be covered elsewhere. Anyway, moving along here. Let's see. Those are the conferences. Now, we also, as a part of the United Nations, have what we call the Wildlands Project. And we've covered the Wildlands Project in the past. But more and more it seems that there are human beings that are coming in contact with wildlife that are dangerous because of wildlife relocation. And this is something that very rarely ever gets talked about, and that's why we're doing it here. This is a piece that was sent to me by Wanda, by the way. She says in this, mother describes the horror of seeing a cougar attack her four-year-old daughter. The attack was the second on the island in a month. Conservation officers say that the cougars have become more aggressive because of a shortage of prey animals. Now, Wanda says, we knew it would come to this, and worse, that is yet to come. Watch and see how utterly silent the Wildlands Project purveyors are, both the elected officials and those implementing the global control plan, using reintroduction of large predators. Those who are in the business of reintroducing and protecting, quote-unquote, such large predators, listen up. It is not the fault of the large predators for doing what they do naturally, but it is the sole fault of those raising and loosing these large predators upon the public. They are natural killing machines, and there's only so much of the prey of the sort that those who are loosing them upon the public keep promising they will choose for their own food sources. When they run out of the wildlife prey, they seek out human children for their meals. Then what? This should be an attempted murder charge against every pro-large predator reintroducer, nothing less. Note that in the related reading, there are current sightings of cougars in India, and Virginia, with known populations of cougars in Kansas, Oklahoma, Michigan, and dozens of other states. Add to this the exploding wolf and bear and wolverine populations, and it's nothing short of a recipe for disaster. What if this little girl's mother was not a quick-thinking emergency room nurse? What if a helicopter had not been quickly summoned and readily available? Well, I guess I said that was Wanda. I guess Julie, some woman named Julie, wrote that. So we have this. Now, I'm going to share this piece with you here. This came from the Canadian Press, Vancouver. She's not much bigger than the cougar she fought off. And Monique Bazile admits she's always had a fear of cougars, but that didn't stop her from racing at the cat hunched over her four-year-old daughter. She says, "I saw the cougar on her. I wasn't the least bit afraid," she said. "It was instinctual. I'm sure anyone would have done the same thing, any parent." The attack happened on Wednesday near Zabalas on the northwest corner, northwest coast of Vancouver Island. Near tears several times during a news conference on Friday, Bazile described the horror of seeing the cat over Haley, her little girl's blood on its muzzle. Bazile said Haley is a trooper and was always trying to get rid of the cougar. She's fighting him off, going, "Get off of me, get off of me." Monique's only weapon was a small cooler that contained four bottles of beer and a water bottle. She says, "I grazed it on its shoulder and it wasn't fazed. It kept its ground and it snarled and growled at me," she said. "It had blood on its face from my little girl." Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to think for a minute. Put yourself in this situation. You have a son or a daughter, and this cat comes along and attacks your child. She says, "I was angry and I said, 'You get off of her.' The cougar took off into the bush just seconds later. Her daughter was covered in blood, her scalp torn open right to the skull." Bazile is an emergency room nurse at Lionsgate Hospital in North Vancouver and knew immediately what to look for. "Her neck wasn't touched," she said. She believes it was her husband's insistence that Haley put on her life jacket at their vehicle before the family went down to the Cork River to swim that saved the girl's life. Quote, "I agree that Haley's life jacket probably protected her neck," unquote, said Dr. Cindy Vishier, the plastic surgeon who operated on the girl at Children's Hospital in Vancouver. She continued by saying, "And it may have even protected some part of her scalp." Rashir described putting the girl's scalp back together like a puzzle. Unbelievable. She said the girl had hundreds of connected lacerations on her scalp, but it looked as if she would have had minimal visible scarring once surgery heals. Haley also had some puncture wounds and scratches, but her condition is considerably stable. Rashir said, quote, "She's very fortunate that her face wasn't significantly involved," unquote. Her mother describes Haley as a stubborn little girl with a big attitude who loves to swim, sing, and dance. Bazile said Haley remembers that attack and that the cougar jumped out of the tree to attack her. Her daughter is showing signs of anger, which she sees as hopeful. She said that she would like to take the kitty to the deep end of the pool and drown her. Trackers with dogs tried to follow the animal, but the scent was lost. The Wildlands Project goes forward, and they're relocating this wildlife so that nature can thrive and be linked together. Never mind the toll it takes on human beings. And that's what sustainable development is all about, ladies and gentlemen. Sustainable development is about caging humanity as the wildlife are free to roam. Those that raise cattle are having problems with various animals of prey and they're powerless because of the law. They're powerless to do anything to defend their animals, their cattle. If they shoot them, they go to prison. And the government said, "Oh, we'll pay you. We'll pay you for the animals that you lose." What insanity! What insanity! Our farmers and ranchers are being put into a situation where they're not able to defend their livestock. They're not able to defend their home against animals of prey, because the animals of prey are more important than human beings. So here we see wolves in China. Same story as USA. This is another one that was sent to me by Wanda. It says, "We are getting repeat stories from various parts of the United States. Identical programs and circumstances, identical restricted procedures for handling them. We find consistent happenings in various remote parts of the world that are the same as in our country." Now, what does that tell you? They say, this is one global agenda being very professionally and successfully implemented throughout the world with threatened gun control. And there you have it. Threatened gun control. How can humans defend themselves? And see, that's the point. You're not supposed to be able to defend yourself. They want everything like a big giant jungle. And may the fittest survive. You see, when you're face to face with a cat, you'll literally be afraid to go outside of your home. And that's the situation that Jackie Petru is in right now. She's got one of those cats that roams around her house. And she's been concerned about going out without a firearm. What happens when we're disarmed? We won't be able to go outside of our house ever without the threat of possibly facing a cat or some wild beast, and we'll literally be defenseless. So anyway, this is Beijing. To lose their livelihoods or to break the law, that is the question facing herdsmen in China's wild, wild west. The current situation on the grasslands of western China offers farmers a real dilemma. Wolves are taking their livestock, but under China's environmental laws, they are a protected species and must not be killed. But recent reports of big bad carnivores devouring livestock have meant the wolves' days as untouchables may be coming to an end. Last April, a pack of wolves attacked a pasture close to Urumqi in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region, killing 10 sheep belonging to herdsman Beek. On a wintry January night in Inner Mongolia, 180 sheep fell victim to wild wolves. 180 sheep on one night. One January night, 180 sheep fell victim to wild wolves. We have the same thing going on in the United States as they do in China. And that's the point, proving that it's a global agenda. We have ranchers and farmers today that are not able to protect their livestock, because if they shoot it, they'll go to jail. If they shoot a wolf, they shoot some other predator animal, they go to jail. So they're literally stuck between a rock and a hard place. As the government says, "Oh, don't worry. You may lose your livestock. We'll pay you for it." You can't defend yourself. And maybe the government will pay you. Often they don't. We live today in a controlled society. We live today in an insane asylum. You're listening to American Exposé. I'm Darren Wicks. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. We have much more on the way. I'm going to get into some communitarian information from Nikki Rapana in Nordica. So stay with us.
Listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
In this day of economic uncertainty and soaring unemployment, safe investments are often hard to find. But investing in the precious metals is the safest investment of all, because gold and silver is real money. Government-printed currency is not. Call Melody Cedarstrom at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company at 1-800-375-4188. Melody has been helping people secure their financial future for over 10 years. While others in the business claim honesty, Melody will deliver. Give her a call. 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
You are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. We do not have freedom of speech because the Constitution gives it to us. The Constitutional Amendment was written to keep the government from taking our freedom away. The Creator gave us our rights, but He also gives us the capacity to do evil or usurp the rights of others. Our individual rights end where the rights of another begin. No one has the right to do evil, because evil can never be right. Those who would seek to limit your right to speak or hear the truth are the same who seek to subjugate, control, and enslave you. Freedom is not free. Support the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network by going to firstamendmentradio.com on the internet and following the instructions there to support us. Thank you for listening.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for His people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
Record budget deficits, bankruptcies galore, and the U.S. dollar is at an all-time low. With today's gloomy economic outlook, safe investments are often hard to find. For over a decade, Melody Cedarstrom at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company has been helping people secure their future by investing in the precious metals. Melody has the honesty, integrity, and experience that is often lacking in the precious metals business. Let her put it to work for you. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
And I wanna believe you when you tell me that it'll be okay. Yeah, I try to believe you, but I don't. When you say that it's gonna be, it always turns out to be a different way. I try to believe you.
Welcome back to the broadcast, American Exposé. Go to the website, AmericanExposé.com, American spelled with a K, not a C. A lot of research waiting for you at the website. And there's partner websites there as well, where there's a lot more research. And information is being added all the time, thanks to my partner, Dennis. So check it out. Check out some of the good stuff that he has for you. From the Chicago Tribune, we see traffic cameras being bringing nightmares of police state. George Orwell wrote about a futuristic society, and in it, the benevolent government was called Big Brother. Every home had a television screen in it. The difference was, you didn't watch it, it watched you. You got in trouble if you turned it off. And of course, the streets and public buildings all had cameras. And everyone was watched 24/7. Therefore, the world was divided into the watchees and the watchers. The only thing George got wrong when he wrote the story in the 1950s is that he projected that it would come to pass in 1984. He missed it by 21 years, this writer in the Chicago Tribune says.
Now, many places have security cameras. London has cameras all over the city. It did not prevent the massacre in their subway. And why is that, listeners? Why didn't it prevent the massacre in their subway? Well, could it be that those pointing the finger at the terrorists are themselves the terrorists? It did not prevent a suspect from escaping to Italy. Well, is this just window dressing, ladies and gentlemen? So now our cities are posting cameras at intersections to make us safer. If your car goes through a red light or speeds, your car gets a ticket. Of course, since your car doesn't work or have income, you have to pay it. No matter that your child or your brother was borrowing your car, this person says, I object. The grounds are more than one. Let me reel off a few. The conservative Supreme Court justices and nominees do not find privacy a right in the Constitution. The 10th Bill of Rights Amendment reserves all rights not given up to the government, to the people. I believe your privacy is a God-given right. I do not relish cameras watching every move I make. It's a horrible nightmare of a police state. Chicago Tribune, ladies and gentlemen. From USA Today, it says, on security, public draws blurred lines. This says, from New York, it's the debate over where to draw the line between public safety and civil liberties is being waged, among other places, in the labyrinth of train and subway entrances below Penn Station. For her part, Judy Joseph, who works for a publishing company in the city, would like to see more security on trains, not less. She's comfortable with police randomly searching bags and backpacks, as long as it's clear that everybody could be subject to being searched. Do you see what they're doing to people? Do you see the ignorance of the American people? 4 years after September 11th, the terrorist attacks on New York and Washington, and I'll put the terrorist attacks in quotation marks, Americans continue to struggle with how to strike a balance between security and freedom. A question that has been intensified this summer by the bombings of London's transit system. Well, folks, let me offer some clarity here. Benjamin Franklin said, they can give up essential liberty to maintain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Now, this communitarian police state, which is what it is being set before us and put into place around us, and few realize that they're a part of the system. Through ignorance, they've been able to accomplish what they're doing. Nikki Rapana writes in the Anti-Communitarian League, which is one of the partner sites, the very first partner site listed on AmericanExpose.com. She says, Fabian propaganda finally won the war between the British Empire and her wayward American colonies. Thinking Americans are bought, tricked, used, shammed, or bullied into endorsing communitarian law without ever once being told or asking what the heck it represents. Any American who believes there's still a functioning constitutional republic is living in a dream world. It's not the Matrix or the aliens, it's just a slick, planned, professional human con job. For all intents and purposes, our system of protecting individuals ended with a whimper. It was a very successful silent coup, and it was pulled off without a hitch. The term does show up occasionally in the mainstream press, but always as if it's some kind of vague new good thing. They write a lot about it in their books and political journals, and it's discussed and taught in the upper academia and law schools. Many American academics have written about the problems with the ideology, but for the most part, local politicians and community developers who promote and enforce communitarian solutions rarely discuss the synthesis as if they understand any of it. Officials who follow communitarian principles have total police power now. American cops block off neighborhoods and go door to door asking neighbors for help and information that will help them catch the bad neighbor, bad, quote unquote, neighbor next door. Today it takes at least 4 cops to arrest people accused or suspected of potential for crime. Not only are our prisons overflowing with communitarian political prisoners, our local jails fill with victims of bizarre interventions performed on behalf of the community at large. The Domestic Violence and Crime Acts allowed for uncountable bogus charges against innocent Americans. But that's old news. Now they've gone ahead and reorganized the federal government into one central agency called the Department of Homeland Security. Constitutionally mandated separation of powers no longer exists. The progressive slow series of events that led to the coup can be retraced by following the documented and archived historical march of Hegelian conflicts. Today, their legions number in the millions. They are insanely wealthy, positioned, and well-prepared. There is no organized resistance. The U.S. fell for the biggest con job in recorded human history. We still might not know who they are or what the connection is between Etzioni and Chertoff, but it's definitely the communitarians in the White House who dictate all U.S. foreign and domestic policy. It was accomplished with slow, steady academic planning. The virus was planted long ago. We are all infected. By the time U.S. legislators passed laws supporting a diseased communitarian system of government, we were easily convinced that we asked for their solution. Even now, as communitarian plans unfold before our eyes, we're still not supposed to know exactly what it is, nor do we really care to know. Our smartest people chase straw man after straw man, claiming everyone else is a sheeple, but who identifies the one thing that supports the new system? And I want to say one thing about this straw man situation. Because I was talking to Chris Gerner, and he was on another network filling in for a talk show host. And he made some comment in reference to a caller about how the caller was bashing Bush. And he said that what difference does it make if anybody else was in there, they would have done this, they're going to implement the same thing. And I guess he got a lot of complaints. A lot of other callers complained that he said that. And they were kind of beating up on him over it. And it's the truth, ladies and gentlemen. See, the point is you have these neocons talking about what a good guy Bush is. And yet he just signed a climate treaty with Asia. What would Kerry have done? He would have signed the Kyoto Protocol. Where's the difference? Where is the difference? The agenda moves forward no matter who's in office. So Bush is a straw man. Every president, in my thinking, is a straw man. These are the people you're supposed to blame. You're supposed to hate Bush. You're supposed to blame him. Public sentiment isn't supposed to be in favor of him. Clinton was supposed to be a bad guy, a pervert, that everyone hated. Oh, well, Clinton was a very popular president. Well, with whom was he popular? He wasn't popular to decent, God-fearing Americans. And see, I don't really think Clinton was that popular in the first place. I think that's a lie that the media tells. Clinton was a scoundrel and still is a scoundrel. But every president is a scoundrel. But they're all straw men. They're there for you to take your hostilities out, to have a point of contention. The truth of the matter is, they're a puppet. They're controlled. They're implementing the agenda of their masters. So she says, our smartest people chase straw man after straw man, claiming everyone else is a sheeple, but who identifies the one thing that supports the new system. When will Americans get the whole truth about the philosophy that changed their world? We think never. Even though that there's ample evidence that communitarianism is the final synthesis in the Hegelian dialectic. There's simply no hope anymore that the New World Order is a paranoid conspiracy theory. The Hegelian dialectic is verifiably the formula for a global community empire. Individual freedom versus communist slavery equals mandatory communitarian volunteerism. Mandatory volunteer communities are the backbone for the emerging global government. The advertising campaign to encourage citizen volunteerism has begun in earnest. And you see these late night public service announcements on television and probably hear them on the radio promoting volunteerism. That's a part of it, folks. She says, our children are being coaxed into becoming volunteer communitarians. The message is everywhere, from the first six pages of Rolling Stone magazine to radio ads for the National Guard. American soldiers do not come together for the common good. They swear to defend the Constitution. Think about it. When did behavior treatment come under the authority of U.S. courts? When did behavior laws gain more power than the Fifth Amendment due process? When did victims, quote-unquote, attain more rights than the accused? When did Americans first need permission for business and recreational pursuits? When did it happen that we needed a permit for some new government agency for practically everything we want to do? When did our mental and physical health become the business of government? When was U.S. history rewritten to say our founding fathers were communitarians? The Bill of Rights really is dead. We've shown that not one lawyer in the country will use it to challenge communitarian laws, interventions, actions, or programs. The Bill of Rights really is dead. We've shown that not one lawyer in the country will use it to challenge the communitarian laws, interventions, actions, or programs. All national law is outdated and totally subservient to community acquis. Citizens residing in new democratic societies are deathbound in non-negotiable Hegelian agreements. Thousands of onslaughts against American legal principles were slowly inserted into our system for over a century. Just because you and I were never told that this was what was going on doesn't mean it didn't happen. Most Americans we've met get all their news from the communitarian media, which only tells them what they need to know. They'll never admit the American people are walking into the final synthesis. They use lofty-sounding propaganda messages, like volunteering for good causes. That's our new responsibility. Good people don't make their own choices. They find a way to give to Luciferian programs. Our school children have already been forced into community service for a decade. Many now willingly choose volunteer jobs, quote-unquote, for the USA Citizen Corps. Will you volunteer for theosophical organizations? Will you volunteer for theosophical organizations? Is your private skills information included in your town's community development maps? Are you an asset or an identified problem? You do know it's only the bad, selfish people who refuse to join the Soviet. A good citizen squeals on bad neighbors who won't do their part or who break communitarian laws. The global future recommended by the leading communitarian authority is to provide or is to combine U.S. military power with the UN court. Communitarianism is the emerging world justice system. All modern wars are communitarian wars. It influences all UN-endorsed programs for saving the world. Sustainable development is communitarian theory and law. Violent peacekeeping and freedom fighting are communitarian solutions. Community policing was a communitarian idea. Cops write and enforce communitarian laws. From land use to domestic violence to DUIs to the war on drugs, our free citizens are arrested, fined, and sentenced for communitarian crimes. United Nations Local Agenda 21 is the 1992 blueprint handed out in Rio. The International Criminal Court, or the International Court of Justice at The Hague, Netherlands, is in the Peace Palace. Every player associated with the emerging global peaceful synthesis is communitarian. Peace really does mean war. The entire globe is communitarian property now. The community empire is inside the gates. They're making their final moves. Would Americans stop them if they were told who they are? Can they be stopped? And she continues here. She says, your reaction to our work is important. It determines the lives of millions of people across the globe. It determines the lives of millions of people across the globe. Your automatic contempt of our ACL work, based on your innocence, trust, patriotism, party status, stubbornness, laziness, or sheer apathy, helps ensure all your children will be slaves. I'm not kidding, and I can back that up quite easily. Even if you think I'm a wacko, maybe it could bother you just a little bit that you've never been told anything about the Hegelian dialectic or communitarianism. Once in your life of watching TV, reading the daily paper, and reading magazines. How is that glaring omission from the most incredible changes in world politics even possible unless you are purposefully not being told about the new world utopian vision? Ask yourself this. Why don't you already know about Hegel or Etzioni? What's the big secret? Don't you want to know? That's Nikki Rapana writing on the Anti-Communitarian League website. Now, I want to get into the Hegelian dialectic a little more in depth because we talk about it a lot on this program. To give you some background, as I've said before, the Hegelian dialectic is the means by which all change happens today. It is the way the controllers are moving society into a certain direction where otherwise it would be impossible to do. They need people to come willingly into their fold. It's much easier to get people by manipulation and coercion to accept ideas of change rather than to do so by violence. Again, from the Anti-Communitarian League website, George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel was a 19th century German philosopher and theologist who wrote The Science of Logic in 1812. For many historians, George Hegel is perhaps the greatest of the human idealist philosophers. In 1847, the London Communist League, that is Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, used Hegel's theory of the dialectic to back up their economic theory of communism. Now in the 21st century, Hegelian Marxist thinking affects our entire social and political structure. The Hegelian dialectic is a framework for guiding our thoughts and actions into conflicts that lead us to a predetermined solution.
If we do not understand how the Hegelian dialectic shapes our perceptions of the world, then we do not know how we are helping to implement the vision. When we remain locked into dialectical thinking, we cannot see outside the box. Hegel's dialectic is the tool which manipulates us into a frenzied circular pattern of thought and action. Every time we fight for or defend against an ideology, we are playing a necessary role in Marx and Engels' grand vision, their grand design to advance humanity into a dictatorship of the proletariat. The synthetic Hegelian solution to all these conflicts can't be introduced unless we all take a side that will advance the agenda. The Marxist global agenda is moving along at breakneck speed. The only way to completely stop the privacy invasions, expanding domestic police powers, land grabs, insane wars against inanimate objects and transient verbs, covert actions, and outright assaults on an individual liberty, is to step outside the dialectic. This releases us from the limitations of controlled and guided thought. When we understand what motivated Hegel, we can see his influence on all of our destinies. Then we become real players in the very real game that has been going on for at least 224 years. Hegelian conflicts steer every political arena on the planet, from the United Nations to the major American political parties all the way down to local school boards and community councils. Dialogues and consensus building are primary tools of the dialectic, and terror and intimidation are also acceptable formats for obtaining the goal. The ultimate third way agenda is world government. Once we get what's really going on, we can cut the strings and move our lives in original directions outside the confines of the dialectical madness. Focusing on Hegel's and Engels' ultimate agenda and avoiding getting caught up in their impenetrable theories of social evolution gives us the opportunity to think and act our way toward freedom, justice, and genuine liberty for all. Today, the dialectic is active in every political issue that encourages taking sides. We can see an environmentalist instigating conflicts against private property owners, in Democrats against Republicans, in Greens against Libertarians, and Communists against Socialists, and Neocons against traditional conservatives, and community activists against individuals, in pro-choice versus pro-life, in Christians against Muslims, in isolationists against interventionists, in peace activists against war hawks. No matter what the issue, the invisible dialectic aims to control both the conflict and the resolution of differences and leads everyone involved into a new cycle of conflicts. We're definitely not in Kansas anymore, they say. And that's the point. In the Hegelian dialectic, all arguments are controlled. We have to start learning to think for ourselves. Ladies and gentlemen, until we learn to think for ourselves, we're doomed to be manipulated our entire life. We have to understand the Hegelian dialectic. Thanks for being with us this week. God bless. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Shadows are falling and I'm running out of breath. Keep me in your heart for a while. If I leave you, it doesn't mean I love you any less. Keep me in your heart for a while. When you get up in the morning and you see that crazy sun, in your heart for a while. There's a train leaving nightly called when all is said and done. Keep me in your heart for a while. simple things around the house. Maybe you'll think of me and smile. You know I'm tied to you like the buttons on your blouse. Keep me in your heart for a while. Take me to your dreams. Touch me as I'm falling to you. When the winter comes, keep the fires lit, and I will be right next to you. Engine drivers headed north to Pleasant Street. Keep me in your heart for a while.